Two children vanished without a trace. Their mother smiled through press conferences, danced on a beach, and swore she was chosen by God. But behind that smile was a chilling truth, one built on doomsday prophecies, spiritual possession, and shallow graves. This isn't just the story of a mother gone mad. This is the unraveling of a woman who believed she was doing heaven's work, even as she buried her own children in her backyard. You're about to hear the truth from her own lips. Welcome to Doomsday Mom. Welcome to the Murder Tape Chronicles audiobook. If you haven't already, please consider following us on your favorite podcast platform. Today we present to you the Doomsday Mom audiobook. Let's dive into this thrilling narrative together. Chapter 1, My Beautiful Broken World. There's a silence that comes before revelation. So still, so consuming, it swallows the air and leaves only the thrum of your heartbeat and the whisper of something higher. That silence found me in a grocery store aisle, of all places. Cans of chicken soup lined the shelves in front of me, untouched. I had been staring at them for 20 minutes, maybe more. It was like time folded in on itself. My cart was empty. JJ was humming to himself beside me, tugging on the hem of my cardigan with his little sticky fingers, and Tylee, sweet, sharp, too clever Tylee, was a few feet away, rolling her eyes like only a 16-year-old girl can. And then it hit me. Not a thought. A knowing. God had chosen me. Not metaphorically. Not symbolically. Not in the way pastors at some cheery megachurch preach to desperate housewives. I mean literally. Tangibly. With a weight that settled on my shoulders like a velvet cloak. And once I felt it, I couldn't unfeel it. That was the beginning of everything. The unraveling. The awakening. The end. Back then, I was still married to Charles. A decent man, in the conventional sense. He made good money. He tried. But he was dull. Spiritually dead. The kind of man who smiles at a sunset and never asks what lies beyond it. He loved me, yes, but he never saw me. Not the real me. Not the woman God had crafted from divine fire and fate. Our home was a pretty cage. Neutral colors. Smiling photos. Tidy schedules. I played my part. Soccer mom. Church volunteer. Bible study leader. But beneath it all, I was aching. Yearning for something higher. I knew I wasn't born to simply exist. I was meant to ascend. Enter Chad Daybell. He came into my life like thunder without a storm. At first, it was just his books, paperback revelations sold in quiet corners of religious bookstores, with covers that looked cheap but ideas that burned. He wrote of portals, past lives, dark spirits, and light ratings, how every soul had a vibration, a purpose, a score. I read them like scripture. I devoured them. And then we met. And I knew. The moment our eyes locked, I felt it. A jolt. A memory from a life I hadn't lived, but couldn't deny. Chad wasn't a stranger. He was my eternal companion, my sealed partner, my prophet. We'd lived countless lives before this one, bound by spiritual destiny. He told me things no man ever had, about my soul, my mission, my divinity. He made me feel seen, chosen, sacred. Charles called it insanity. He found my emails with Chad. He overheard our late-night phone calls. He confronted me, angry, afraid. I tried to explain, but he couldn't understand. How could he? He hadn't been reborn. He hadn't opened his spiritual eyes. He said I was unstable. That I was losing my grip on reality. That I needed help. He threatened to take the kids. He even contacted the police. That's when I realized Charles wasn't Charles anymore. Chad explained it. He said dark spirits can inhabit bodies. Zombies, he called them. Not the Hollywood kind, but the real ones. People who look the same on the outside, but whose spirits have left. Hollow vessels. Dangerous ones. Chad had charts, lists, entire spreadsheets categorizing people as light or dark, and once someone's rating dropped too low, they became a threat. JJ. Tylee. Charles. All threats. At first, I resisted the idea. What mother wouldn't? But then I started to see it. JJ's eyes no longer sparkled with innocence. They darted unfocused. His tantrums became violent. His laughter unnatural. Tylee, once my protector and confidant, now stood against me. Questioned me. Accused me. Her face twisted with suspicion, anger, fear. She clung to logic like a drowning girl to driftwood, and it broke my heart to watch. But logic is the enemy of faith. So I chose. I chose light. I chose destiny. I chose Chad. Charles died in July. Shot by my brother, Alex. Self-defense, we said. Divine intervention, I believed. The man who had once loved me was gone. He had been consumed by darkness. His soul had departed. What remained was just skin and teeth and menace. And God doesn't make mistakes. Alex was a warrior. Chad called him our protector. The day after Charles died, I went out for pancakes. Smiling. Laughing. People thought it was callous. But it was peace. I felt peace for the first time in years. The whispers started soon after. My family grew distant. My sister wouldn't return my calls. Neighbors stared. But I didn't care. I was preparing for the gathering, the new world. The one Chad said would come after the cleansing. The one only the chosen would survive. We had a mission. We had orders. We had each other. And the kids. Well, I tried. I really did. I tried to hold on to them. To believe they could be saved. But each day their resistance grew. They were angry. Scared. They didn't understand. Tylee begged me to stop. She screamed. She called me a lunatic. She said I wasn't her mother anymore. Maybe she was right. When they disappeared, I said nothing. I smiled through the questions. I dodged the cops. I played dumb. They're safe, I said. They're with friends. I even flew to Hawaii with Chad. A second honeymoon. A new beginning. We took beach photos. Laughed beneath the sun. Meanwhile, the world was looking for my kids. I didn't care. Because I knew where they were. And I knew why. They were gone. But in my mind, they'd been gone long before. Their spirits had left. Their bodies were shells. Empty. Obstructing. Tethering me to a life I no longer wanted. A life I had outgrown. I dreamed of Tylee the night after we buried her. She was standing in a field of fireflies, her face peaceful. She said nothing. Just looked at me with wide, unblinking eyes. I think that was her way of saying goodbye. Or maybe it was guilt. But guilt is for the unchosen. For the lost. I am not lost. I am ascending. I am the mother of the new world. And the old world had to burn. Chapter 2. The world begins to watch. They started calling me Mommy Doomsday, before they even knew the truth. Before the sirens. Before the search warrants. Before the bodies. I heard it first on a talk show. One of those daytime gossip hours with fake smiles and louder opinions. They plastered my face on the screen, next to Charles's old mugshot and a blurry photo of JJ holding his tablet. I watched it from a hotel bed in Kauai, toes tucked under a floral comforter, the smell of sea salt drifting through the window. I didn't flinch. I didn't cry. I didn't even change the channel. Because they didn't get it. They were still living in the shadows of a dying world. The old world. The one that told women like me to sit still, smile nice, and sacrifice everything for the children. They didn't understand that I'd already been chosen. That I had crossed over. They thought I was running. No. I was ascending. Still, it's strange how fast things moved once the whispers turned into headlines. I always thought the end of the world would come with trumpets and earthquakes. Instead, it came with press conferences and podcasts. Where are the children? That was the question that echoed like a hammer in every room I entered. From police interrogation rooms to grocery store aisles. From my sister's icy phone calls to the judge's gavel. From the whispers behind my back to the headlines screaming in bold red font. But none of them were asking the right questions. They should have been asking where they were. The dark ones. The hollow ones. The ones who looked human but weren't. Chad said the veil was thinning. The spiritual and the physical were beginning to merge. Portals opened more easily now. We could sense when people had crossed to the dark side, as he called it. He had an entire scale. A chart that rated people by light and dark, from 1 to 1,000. Tylee had dropped below 20. JJ. Lower. And once someone dipped too far into darkness, there was no return. Their body had to be dealt with. It wasn't murder. It was release. Alex, my brother, understood. God bless him. He was loyal to the mission, even when the world branded him a thug, a killer. He saw what Chad saw. What I saw. He didn't flinch when we talked about removal. That's what we called it. Not death. Not killing. Removal. The spirit was already gone. We were just cleaning up the vessel. But the world doesn't like mess. Especially not when it's wrapped in religion. When the investigators came to the house in Rexburg, it was cold. Snow still blanketed the yard like a burial cloth. They wore thick jackets, grim expressions, and suspicion like cologne. They asked for JJ. I smiled. He's with friends. Tylee. She's at college. She needed space. It was easy at first. Lies wrapped in soft tones, delivered with a mother's concern. I told them what they wanted to hear. Enough truth to taste real. Enough fiction to keep them confused. But they didn't stop. They kept coming back. Knocking. Calling. Asking. Digging. Neighbors grew suspicious. Reporters stalked the sidewalk. Even my own family turned. My son from a previous marriage, Colby, he accused me of things I never imagined hearing from a child. "What did you do?" he shouted into the phone. "Where are they?" I hung up. How could I explain something so divine to someone so trapped in the mortal world? He didn't understand the mission. Neither did the cops. They filed missing person reports. They issued ultimatums. They called me a liar. A manipulator. "Why won't you tell us where your children are, Lori?" "Because you wouldn't understand. Because they're not here anymore. Because they were dark. Because the world needed to be cleansed. Because I couldn't carry their weight anymore. I wanted to scream it. From the courthouse steps. From the cell I was placed in after they finally dragged me back from paradise. But they would have locked me away faster. So I smiled. That's what they hated the most. That I could sit in the courtroom, back straight, hair curled, lipstick perfect, and smile while they listed all the ways I failed as a mother. They called me cold. I was holy. They called me a murderer. I was a messenger. They called me insane. I was chosen. I remember the exact moment the world turned on me. It wasn't when they found out the kids were gone. It wasn't even when I refused to help find them. It was the beach photo. The one of Chad and me in Hawaii. Smiling. Holding hands. Lay around my neck. Sand on my feet. Waves crashing behind us like nature herself had blessed our union. They said it was sick. Disturbing. That no grieving mother would look that happy. They were right. I wasn't grieving. Because I knew where they were. Buried. Hidden. Returned to the earth that birthed them. Their bodies were gone, yes. But their spirits? Already crossed. I kept waiting for someone, anyone, to understand. For one voice in the courtroom to stand and say, "Maybe she's not crazy. Maybe she's right." But no one did. Instead, I was handcuffed. Paraded through airports like a trophy. Hauled into courtrooms with cameras aimed at my face. My mugshot was on every screen. My smile dissected. My sanity questioned. And Chad, he stayed quiet. Silent. Stoic. Watching from the sidelines as the noose tightened around my neck. We were supposed to usher in the new world together. Now I was alone. I began to wonder, had I misread the signs? Had I followed a false prophet? Or was this just another test? Another chapter in the holy book I'd been writing in my head for years? The world called it a scandal. A case. A tragedy. But for me, it was prophecy unfolding. And the reckoning wasn't over yet. They had no idea what was buried beneath that yard. But soon they would. And then, the Real story would begin. Chapter 3, Unearthed. There's a moment, right before your world collapses, where the air changes. It thickens. Tenses. Like even the atoms are holding their breath, waiting for the unraveling to begin. For me, that moment came on a cloudless morning in June 2020. I was in a holding cell in Madison County, Idaho, concrete walls, steel toilet, flickering light above. I'd been there for weeks. Maybe longer. Time moved differently in there. Days bled into nights, into court dates, into silence. I prayed sometimes. Spoke to God. Spoke to Chad in my dreams. The mission still mattered. I reminded myself that every morning. The mission still matters. That was my mantra. But something was off that day. I felt it in my bones. The guards moved differently. Quieter. The clicks of their boots against the floor didn't echo like they used to. And the sky, when I glimpsed it through the slit of the cell window, was too blue. Too perfect. As if nature herself was mocking me. Then came the voice. "Lori, you need to come with us." There was no urgency in his tone. That's what scared me. They led me down the hallway, two guards at my sides, one in front. As if I was dangerous. As if I could still conjure power from thin air. I kept my face calm. I had learned how to be a statue by then. How to smile with my lips while keeping my eyes cold and empty. They brought me into the interview room. Not the courtroom. Not the chapel. The fucking interview room. That's when I knew. Detective Hermosillo sat across from me. He was always calm. Always too calm. Like he was waiting for me to hang myself with my own silence. He slid a photograph across the table. At first, I didn't look. "Take your time," he said. I didn't want to. Because I already knew. Eventually, I did. It was a black and white image. Grainy. From a drone or a chopper. A backyard. A patch of freshly disturbed earth. a dog sniffing around the edge, yellow tape in the distance. And then, another photo, this one in color, close-up, bones, tiny, curved, a scrap of fabric still clinging to what used to be a pajama pant leg. Dinosaurs. JJ loved dinosaurs. The world slowed. My ears rang, but I didn't blink. Then came the second photo. Charred, twisted, fragments of ribs, spine, teeth. They had found Tylee, too, or what was left of her, scattered and burned, buried in pieces. And still, I said nothing, because what was there to say? They already knew. My mind flashed back to that night. The night we drove to Chad's house with JJ asleep in the back seat, cradling his stuffed dog. Tylee was gone by then. We had already completed her release. It hadn't been easy. She had screamed, fought, accused. Alex was shaking afterward. I held his hand, told him he had done God's work, that her light was gone, that we had set her free. But JJ, he was different. He was silent that night. Still, too still, like he sensed it. When we handed him to Alex, he didn't cry. And when we tucked his body into the shallow grave in Chad's backyard, I didn't cry either. I prayed. I whispered thanks to the Lord for giving me the strength to do what other mothers couldn't. I had sacrificed my earthly family for my spiritual one. That was love. That was obedience. That's what I told myself, over and over again. But now, staring at those photographs, I felt something crack. Not guilt. No. Not sadness. Not even fear. It was betrayal. They had promised me this would remain hidden. Chad had promised. He told me the earth itself would protect them. That the veil was too thick for mortals to penetrate. That their bodies would never be found because their souls had ascended. He lied. I looked up at the detective. His face was unreadable, but his eyes burned with rage. He wanted to scream. I could feel it. But he didn't. He just waited. Do you have anything you want to say, Lori? I opened my mouth. Closed it. This was the part where people expected a breakdown. A sob. A confession. But I had nothing left to give them. Not emotion. Not truth. Not tears. Instead, I whispered. They were already gone. He recoiled, just slightly. I didn't kill my children, I added. Their bodies were necessary. But their spirits? They're somewhere better. The silence in the room was suffocating. I stared down at my shackled hands. The cuffs bit into my wrists. I focused on that. The pain was real. It grounded me. Because everything else, Chad's promises, God's voice, the mission, all of it suddenly felt like mist. Had I been fooled? Had I traded my children for a lie? No. No, I couldn't think like that. That path led to madness. Still, the doubt festered. Later that day, they found Chad. He was driving alone. No warning. No announcement. Just a swarm of deputies dragging him from his SUV. They slammed him onto the pavement, cuffed him, and read him his rights. The news showed it on a loop. Apocalyptic author arrested. We hadn't spoken in weeks. He didn't even try to call me. And when I saw him in the courtroom days later, dressed in jailhouse orange, his face swollen and pale, he wouldn't look at me. Not once. The man who had promised me eternal love, who claimed we were sealed for all eternity, who told me we were God's chosen. He didn't even lift his eyes. That's when the second betrayal hit. First, the earth turned against us. Then Chad. I was alone now. No children. No family. No husband. No mission. Just me. And the world, staring. News anchors called me a monster. Talk show hosts called me insane. Podcasts dissected every breath I took, every smile I gave, every tear I didn't cry. The nation wanted blood. And now they had it, buried 6 feet under in a backyard in Rexburg. They started using the word murder. Not missing. Not cult. Not doomsday mom. Now it was killer. The charges were stacked. Conspiracy, obstruction, desertion, homicide. And yet I still felt calm. Because something in me refused to break. Maybe it was pride. Maybe it was delusion. Maybe it was what was left of my faith, clinging like frost to the edges of a long dead flame. But in that moment, I knew one thing. The world had finally seen the truth, and they weren't ready for it. Chapter 4, The Trial of the Chosen. They called it the trial of the century. I called it Judgment Day, but not in the way they meant it. They thought they were putting me on trial for murder, for conspiracy. For deserting my children and hiding their remains like bones meant nothing. But they weren't just judging me. They were judging my purpose. My belief. My very soul. This wasn't just about JJ and Tylee. It was about who I was now. And who I had become in the eyes of the world. I still remember the first day I stepped into that courtroom. The floor was polished like a church. The lighting was sterile and unforgiving. Rows of people, media, spectators, family, sat behind me like mourners at a funeral. Only they weren't mourning with me. They were mourning for me. Or worse, waiting to watch me burn. The cameras were there too, like vultures with red blinking eyes. I walked in wearing lipstick, a pale blue blouse, my hair curled neatly around my face. I smiled, because I knew they hated that. The jury looked at me like I was an animal, a thing, not a mother, not a woman, just a symbol of everything terrifying and foreign, cult, killer, crazy. Let them look. Let them try to understand something that only a handful of us ever could. They didn't know what it meant to be chosen, to believe something so deeply, so entirely, that it consumed your reality. But what they did know, what they felt, was that something about me was off, and I couldn't stop them from sniffing it out like bloodhounds. The prosecution called it a case of murder wrapped in mysticism. They described me as emotionless, calculating, void of remorse. I heard the words tumble from the mouth of that smug prosecutor, like he was telling ghost stories at a campfire. He held up a photo of JJ, one of the last ever taken. "Look at this child," he said, his voice heavy with artificial sadness. "Look at this boy, 7 years old, buried in his pajamas with a plastic bag around his head, duct tape on his mouth, buried in his stepfather's yard like trash." I stared at the photo. JJ's eyes sparkled. His little fingers were curled around a sippy cup. And I smiled, not because I was cruel, not because I was mocking them, but because I remembered why we did what we did. He was gone before the bag, before the dirt, before the grave. His spirit had already left. Tylee's photo came next, burned, unrecognizable, pieces of her found in different parts of the yard, near a fire pit. The prosecutor called it the most horrific discovery of his career. But he didn't know the truth. Tylee resisted. She refused to let go. Her soul clung to the flesh, even when it was rotting. And that made her dangerous. That made her dark. Alex did what needed to be done. He was always willing to do the hard things. Until it killed him too. The evidence came in waves. Text messages, journal entries, police body cam footage, surveillance videos, phone records. Each piece chipped away at the story I'd tried to protect. Even my own words turned against me. "Sometimes children are dark spirits," I had texted Chad. "They have to be dealt with." The jury heard that. Read it out loud. Some of them flinched. I didn't, because I meant it. And I still do. Then came the witnesses. Friends. Family. Enemies disguised as loved ones. My son, Colby, took the stand. His voice cracked as he described the days he spent wondering where his siblings had gone. "I called her," he said, looking down at his shaking hands. "I begged her to tell me where they were. And she just laughed. That wasn't true. I laughed because it was all so predictable. Of course he wouldn't understand. Of course he would cling to the world like the rest of them." My sister Kay spoke next. Her voice was full of venom. "She used to be such a good mom. I don't know what happened to her. But that was the problem. I didn't happen. I transformed. They didn't mourn the children. Not really. They mourned the old version of me. The woman who baked cookies, signed permission slips, and let herself be defined by motherhood. But that woman was dead. And they never mourned her like they mourned JJ and Tylee." The final dagger came from Chad. They offered him a deal, and I could feel it before the words even left his mouth. He was going to let me burn. He took the stand in shackles. Pale. Sweating. He didn't look at me. They asked him about our beliefs, about the light and dark spirits, about zombies, about the gathering. He hesitated, then said, "It was mostly symbolic. Symbolic." Just like that, our entire gospel was reduced to metaphor. My stomach twisted. He was trying to save himself, throwing me into the fire to shave off his own sentence. He'd told me we were eternal companions, that we had been married in previous lives, that we were sealed forever. Now he was pretending it was all just some flirtation, that it had never been real. I wanted to scream, to leap across the courtroom and shake the lies out of him. But I didn't. I sat still, smiled, even as the walls closed in, even as the gavel dropped, even as the jury foreman stood, cleared his throat, and said the words that changed everything. "We, the jury, find the defendant, Lori Vallow, guilty on all counts." I didn't flinch. The crowd behind me gasped. Someone wept. Someone else muttered, "Thank God." But I just stared straight ahead. Because in that moment, all the noise disappeared. And all I could hear, was silence. That same silence from the grocery store aisle years ago. The one that marked the beginning of my awakening. The silence that wasn't empty, but full. Full of purpose. Full of destiny. And maybe, just maybe, full of punishment. But I wasn't afraid. Because I knew this wasn't the end. Not for me. Not for the mission. Not yet. Chapter 5, Life Without Light. They told me it was a life sentence. No parole. No mercy. No reprieve. But what they didn't understand, what none of them ever understood, was that I'd already been living a life sentence long before the bars closed around me. The walls just made it literal. Now, I wake up to the sound of clanging steel, the hiss of fluorescent lights flickering overhead, and the cold bite of concrete beneath my feet. There's no softness here. No cushion between the past and the present. No Chad. No Alex. No JJ. No Tylee. Just me. Alone with the echo of my choices. They say prison changes a person. I say it reveals them. And every day in here feels like peeling away another layer of who I used to be. The mother. The believer. The wife. The chosen. All of them, hollow now. Just masks. Costumes from another life I can barely remember the lines to. I try to hold on to the mission. I really do. I whisper it to myself some nights as I stare up at the cracks in the ceiling. This is part of God's plan. This is still the path to Zion. The gathering is coming. We just didn't understand the timing. But the longer I sit in this cell, the quieter that voice becomes. Was it ever real? Or did I just need it to be? Some days I replay everything. Every lie. Every text. Every body buried beneath dirt I once called holy ground. I see JJ's face. His dinosaur pajamas. That wide, beautiful smile that made my chest ache with love and frustration all at once. And Tylee. God. Tylee. She was my mirror. My equal. My challenge. She didn't believe in anything unless she saw it with her own eyes, felt it in her bones. I think that's why she saw through me. Before anyone else did. She knew something was wrong. And maybe I did too. But I was in too deep. Chad had me convinced we were prophets. That the world was ending, and that we had been chosen to lead the righteous into the next life. That JJ and Tylee were already gone spiritually. Zombies, shells, barriers to our ascension. He called them dark. I called it destiny. But deep down, buried beneath all the scripture, the visions, the scales of light and dark, was a mother's voice. Small, fragile, and terrified. I ignored her. Over and over again. Now she screams in my head every day. Sometimes I wonder what they'd say if they saw me now. JJ would probably ask where his dog is. Why his room is gone. Why the stars don't look the same behind barbed wire fences. Tylee wouldn't say anything at all. She'd just look at me. Disappointed. Devastated. Maybe that's why I started writing letters. Not to the press. Not to Chad. Not even to Colby, who hasn't spoken to me since the trial ended. To them. To my children. I write them every week. Dear JJ, I miss your laugh. I miss your bouncing steps down the hallway. I miss your sticky fingers and the way you never finished a full glass of juice. I remember how you used to fall asleep in the car, head tilted, mouth open. I remember everything. I swear I do. Dear Tylee, I wish I'd listened more. I wish I'd trusted your instincts. You always saw through people, especially me. I'm sorry I mistook your fear for rebellion. I'm sorry I let faith turn me into someone you couldn't recognize. I'm sorry I let you down. But apologies feel useless when there's no one left to hear them. They don't give you mirrors in here. Only metal sheets screwed to the wall, distorted, warping your reflection until it barely looks human. Maybe that's the point. To remind you of what you've become. To make you forget who you were. I've stopped smiling. The guards noticed it. One of them asked me last week, "You okay, Vallo?" Like I was just another inmate. Another broken cog in the system. I nodded. Said nothing. But the truth is, I don't know. I don't know who I am anymore. The trial is over. The verdict delivered. The body's buried. The world has moved on to the next tragedy. The next scandal. But I'm still here. Locked inside a body that once held power, and now only holds silence. They took my makeup. My books. My letters. But they can't take the memories. Even when I wish they would. Chad hasn't written. Not once. He's still awaiting trial. Still holding on to whatever scraps of our story he can rewrite in his own favor. I sometimes wonder if he'll tell the court that I was the mastermind, that he was manipulated, that I was the monster all along. Maybe I was. Or maybe we both were. There's this one moment I come back to often. Right before JJ died, he looked up at me from the couch, holding his toy dinosaur, and said, "I love you, Mom." Simple, pure. And I said it back. But even then, I felt the detachment. I had already made the decision. I had already chosen a different life. And that's the hardest thing to live with. Not the bars. Not the cold food. Not the stares from other inmates who've seen my face on every channel. It's the memory of that love, and the knowledge that I walked away from it. I tell myself this is purgatory. That maybe, if I endure it long enough, I'll be forgiven. That one day, I'll see them again. In a better world. In a world I once believed I was building. But until then, I will sit. And I will remember. And I will try, God help me, to feel it all. Even the guilt. Even the horror. Even the humanity. Because maybe that's the only salvation left for me now. Not escape. Not ascension. Not light. Just the truth. And the truth is this. I loved my children. And I destroyed them anyway.